You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with Dave Allen. It is March 4th, 2019. It's Monday. Anyway, let's go to the gold and silver prices today. And, you know, another bad day for gold. I guess the good news is it didn't do what it did on Friday, down $20. It's only down $6.50. And yes, we are down still below that 1300 level, down $6.50 at $12.87. Silver took a beating, down $12.15.17, when we've been hovering around that $16 level for a couple of weeks. Platinum was down $23 at $839. Palladium was down $14 at $1,536. I still haven't seen anything to give us any. There had to have been some big dumping of gold somewhere, government somewhere. We know Venezuela supposedly sold to somebody, but who knows if they dumped it or not. So some shenanigans somewhere, ladies and gentlemen, or maybe people just aren't interested in gold when you have the stock market recovering from the December, you know, the world is coming to an end, you know, the Dow having the worst performance since, you know, 1929. And, you know, that might have had something to do with it, but with prices going higher and people's interest, but then the reversal and people have short memories. So, but so let's go to the, where's the dollar index here? Somewhere here I'm looking. Up 0.22 at 96.61. Crude oil was up 70 cents at 56.50. And it looked like the paper markets were up triple digits. Let's see if they held on for the day. Well, no, they were down triple digits, down 205 at 25,820. The NASDAQ was down 17 at 7,577. And the S&P was down 10 at 2,792. 10-year yield, 2.72%. European Asian markets, basically quiet. Japan was up 1%, nothing big. And Fear and Greed Index is dropping just a tad. It was at 67. 66 when we've been hovering around the 70 level. So a little bit of weakness there, but again, you know, look at some of the reports that we've been talking about lately, and I think, you know, it is pretty much due to sluggish economic news. And again, the Dow was down 300 points earlier in the day. It erased about 139-point gain. The S&P was down 0.9%. And the stocks started giving back their gains after the Commerce Department announced that construction spending dropped 0.6% in December. And so they were expecting a gain.
Yeah, you know, equities initially rose early in the morning on news that a trade deal between the U.S. and China could be on the horizon. You know, markets do expect a deal between the two countries by the end of March, but the key here will be whether the deal results in the removal of all tariffs. You know, the reports this morning imply that might happen, but it's going to have to become reality for U.S. China trade to provide a sustainable positive booster for the paper market. Sources say that the U.S. China trade negotiations are in the quote final stages as the two sides prepare for a possible summit at Mar-a-Lago at the end of March to perhaps sign. If a deal is reached, the U.S. could roll back tariffs on at least $200 billion on Chinese goods, while China could remove or cut industry-specific levies like those on vehicles.
Do you think they would really buy our vehicles? Do we have any vehicles that interest them?
Well, I know Ford and GM used to, I mean, certainly, you know, not you know, a big portion of their purchases, but still, you know, particularly GM, I believe, had made up a, you know, a relatively speaking, sizable, you know, proportion. You know, yeah. than it does now.
Yeah, I don't know what vehicles Asians like to drive. I mean, certainly in, your European nations, they all love the Mercedes and they all drive the Mercedes. And so I don't know. I can't. Im China, I vision scooters. I don't know why. I mean, with as many people, now this is not, it's not to be downgraded or anything, but it's just with as many people as they have, you just think that smaller vehicles are going to be, but I do believe that GM and Ford probably produce a separate type vehicle for those markets, one that isn't sold here in the United States, probably.
You've stimulated my curiosity. I will look into that before I return on Wednesday.
Okay. But and another question, if we're going to roll back the tariffs on at least 200 billion in Chinese goods, isn't that what we currently have? 200 billion?
Yeah, I believe so. I believe that would be the kit and caboodle.
So there wouldn't be any tariffs then at
That
all.
would be the beautiful thing. Particularly as far as the from in a political sense, it certainly would be ideal for Trump. Certainly for Xi as well. From his perspective as Chinese premier, to have all the U.S. tariffs removed. So. There's still a lot of uncertainty, and the big question is over intellectual property theft and related matters.
What I don't understand is the whole point of the tariffs. Why would you remove them?
Well, two reasons. I
Because
mean,
free trade is not going to narrow our deficits, our trade deficits, if that's what the main goal was, right?
well, what the stated goals were are compared to, how it's going to be spun in the aftermath of negotiations could be two completely different things. In my mind, this was largely a solution in search of a problem. By the the U.S. that is, and not to say that it could have it could be in part as ostensibly it's been that this the tariffs have been meant as leveraged being that bring the Chinese to the table to get substantive commitments on intellectual property theft, excuse me. As well as, some other structural issues, like cyber theft in general. So we will see at the end of the month. I think things will become a little bit clearer, if this if there's just the removal of tariffs with no other substantive agreements. Then I may, bring up my theory again that this was, all about trying to, create a success story.
Well, what's interesting though is we've had a larger deficit, trade deficit, but the economy did better last year. So as the economy is slowing down, that deficit's going to shrink. So because we're going to be buying less things from China because the markets are slowing, because things are slowing down. So it's going to automatically, if everything is timed properly, everything is going to look as though whatever agreement comes out of China and the United States, it will look as though it's working because our deficit's shrinking, our trade deficit's shrinking. But yet, so well, you're
Well,
right. We'll have to see how it all ends up, but there's a lot of different scenarios that we can
oh, wow.
certainly.
Absolutely. Yeah, let's hear what how the farmers are faring after all of this, and you know, different you know, different industries in both countries, primarily the U.S., of course. But so, well, you know, as Melody alluded, part of the movement in the paper markets today was due to this report on U.S. construction spending having fallen, unexpectedly fell in December as investment in, you know, both private and public projects dropped. That led economists to expect that the government's going to trim its economic growth estimate for the fourth quarter, which I believe it already downgraded from 2.8 to 2.6% a week or so ago. Now, today's report from the Commerce Department was further evidence that the economy did in fact lose momentum at the very end of 2018. Growth is slowing as the stimulus from the $1.5 plus trillion tax cut and increased government spending ebbs. Trade tensions between the U.S. and China, as well as slowing global economies, are also hurting domestic activity. You know, the construction spending report extended the run of weak December economic data that has included retail sales, housing starts, trade, and home sales. Stephen Shields, who's an economist at Moody's Analytics, said the report's in line with the U.S. economy losing some steam at the end of the year. Melody.
You know, the construction spending declined 0.6%, and they were, economists had polled by Reuters had forecast construction spending rising 0.2% in December. But the construction spending increased 1.6% on a year-on-year basis. However, it rose 4.1% in 2018, but that was the weakest reading since 2011. So, you know, based on the construction spending data, you know, these economists expect that the government is going to pare its fourth quarter GDP estimate by at least 0.1 percentage point. And last Thursday, if everyone remembers, we reported that the economy grew at a 2.6% rate in the October-December period, and slowing that, you know, slowing from the third quarter's 3.4%, and the second quarter was 4%. So, huge.
Yeah. Drop. Yeah.
Especially for the holiday season.
Yeah. Yeah, and in terms of expectations, consumer expectations, business investment expectations, you know, the big banks, the big shops who have these well-financed research teams, J.P. Morgan in New York, for example, they say that they continue to see downside risk to their 1.5% growth forecast for the fourth quarter of 2019. And that's with much of the related monthly source data now reported through December. That was Daniel Silver, one of Morgan's economists. So, you know, the housing market's been weighed down by higher mortgage rates, expensive building materials, as well as land and labor shortages. And, you know, residential investment, for example, contracted 0.2% last year. That's the worst performance since 2010. Spending on non-residential structures contracted in both the third and fourth quarters. Melody.
Well, you know, yesterday, Senator Rand Paul announced late yesterday that he would support a measure to terminate the flex of executive power, joining at least three of his Republican colleagues. And of course, the proposal was to block President Trump's national emergency declaration. If all 47 Senate Democrats support the measures expected for Republicans, add up to the simple majority that would be needed to approve it. And as we know, Trump wants to use his emergency powers to secure the $3.6 billion from the Department of Defense in order to build the wall.
Yeah, and he's previously said that he'd take executive actions to transfer another roughly $3 billion toward the project And that's along with the $1.375 billion allotted by Congress last month. You know, Paul joins GOP Senators Susan Collins of Maine, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, and Tom Tillis of North Carolina, who have pledged to vote to terminate or reject the declaration. Others, such as Lamar Alexander of Tennessee, have signaled they could join that group if Trump does not change course, whatever that means.
Well, you know, Paul wrote that he backs Trump's effort to put money toward the border wall, but he wrote that he cannot support the use of emergency powers to get more funding. And, you know, that's what I have an issue with. You just can't. You know, you just
something called the Constitution, Melody.
Yeah. Well, they need to, you know, go back to the Constitution more often on both sides, you know. And it's just, there's the right way and the wrong way. And I don't think that is the right way. But so we'll have to see how that ends and so forth. You know, we often talk about Duffy, Mr. Duffy. He's a chief CEO of the CME. Chicago Mercantile Exchange. And it was, what, a year and a half ago that he had talked about gold, mentioning that it should be $5,000 or $6,000 a year and a half ago, based on everything that was going on, the economy and all the geopolitical mess. Now here is someone else that's talking about gold passing $5,000 and beyond. And we're going to head into a break right now, Dave, so you can pick this up when we get back. Ladies and gentlemen, please stay tuned. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with Dave Allen, and we'll be right back right after these few short messages.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Visit the website dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Dave, let's get fired up today, and let's talk about gold passing $5,000.
Well, you know, John Rubino, who's writing in the dollarcollapse.com newsletter, reminds us that when the financial markets got choppy at the end of last year, the Fed caved almost instantly, but in a sense, only rhetorically. You know, the Fed promised to stop raising interest rates and shrinking the money supply, and the financial markets, which, you know, as we know, are trained to salivate at the sound of Fed happy talk, you know, immediately morphed from risk off to risk on. So stocks are now approaching last year's all-time highs. Bond prices are way up, which is to say long-term interest rates are down, and the mainstream financial press is back to celebrating the Goldilocks economy. But remember, as far as actual monetary policy goes, ladies and gentlemen, nothing has really changed. Last year's Fed fund rate increases are still in place, while the Fed's balance sheet remains diminished, which is to say the cash drained from the economy as the bonds in the Fed's account were retired remained out of action. In short, the damage hasn't been undone, and it's starting to bite.
And you know, I get the listeners and gold buyers are probably getting a little tired. Well, the fundamentals are the same. Things continue to, and yet we see, you know, big deal. We had a couple hundred points drop in the Dow today, and, you know, we had that big reversal. But eventually those fundamentals catch up. We have retail sales are falling, and I think we have an article a little bit later on, Michael Snyder, and we're going to recap some of this again. Retail sales are falling. Housing, which a year ago was in a money bubble, is rolling over. Housing starts are down. Existing home sales have cratered. U.S. manufacturing orders missed big in the most recent reporting month. Hey, what about corporate earnings? Are so weak that analysts are talking about an earnings recession. In fact, all 11 sectors recorded a decline in their bottom-up earnings per share estimate during the first month of the quarter, and that was led by energy and information technology. So overall, 7 sectors recorded a larger decrease in their bottom-up EPS estimate relative to their 5-year average and their 10-year average for the month, for the first month of a quarter. And the slowdown is global, Dave.
Yeah, and, you know, the question is, what does it all mean? You know, realizing that its words have failed, you know, the Fed will be forced to stop promising and start delivering. Not sure what that means, but, you know, the second act of this play isn't just going to be a pause, but a reversal of last year's tightening. Eventually, we'll settle into a permanent state of ever-increasing QE, zero to negative interest rates, and every imaginable kind of fiscal stimulus. You know, Congress, you know, just as the Fed, just can't seem to get out of its own way. Now, Rubino says a simple way to gauge our place on this path is the price of gold. When Act Two, you know, which is gradually falling interest rates and modest QE, you know, when that's implemented, gold should bounce back to around $2,000 per ounce. And when Act 3, you know, massive permanent quantitative easing, bailouts for bankrupt states and cities, when that's in full swing, that's when he thinks gold will pass $5,000. Something to think about, ladies and gentlemen.
And I agree with him 100%, of course. And I think this is one of the bargaining chips that we're using with this trade agreement. And so I think it's kind of interesting. It doesn't get a lot of press. No one really talks about it. But I think it's something that if it isn't used as a bargaining chip in a positive way towards China, it's kind of interesting what could happen. But I'm talking about the Chinese tech giant Huawei. Willy Wabbit.
Smartphones are for kids.
Willy Wabbit. Anyway, Huawei. And I also thought of our Marines. Don't they go, boo-rah?
Ooh, yep, hoorah. Yep,
hoorah. So, anyway, Huawei is courting Americans through newspaper ads and by reaching out to journalists while company officials are under fire in the U.S. Huawei is the number 2 smartphone maker in the world. In fact, its sales topped even Apple's last year. On Friday, a public relations firm representing Huawei reached out to a few U.S. journalists, inviting them to visit the campuses in Shenzhen in a couple weeks this month. Huawei will cover the cost of your flights, hotel, food, and, of course, invitation came after the company had bought ads in major U.S. newspapers this week asking Americans to give Huawei a chance.
Give Huawei a chance, Melody.
Huawei.
Come on. Well, you know, that company is undergoing a very public campaign to reshape its image in the U.S., particularly as Trump administration officials double down on accusations that the company's phones and technology threaten U.S. national security. You know, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo told reporters on Friday in Manila, "We believe that competition, whether it's in 5G or some other technology, ought to be open, free, transparent, and we worry that Huawei is not that." On Friday, Canada's Justice Department cleared the way for a hearing to extradite Huawei's chief financial officer, Meng Wanzhou, who faces U.S. charges of fraud and violating sanctions. The company also faces charges of bank and wire fraud and sanction violations in New York. That trial's set to begin in a little over a week. And in a separate case, the company pleaded not guilty in federal court in Seattle to charges of stealing tech trade secrets.
So is this all part of the deal? Is this all part of 5G? Is this all part of, you know, the trade talks, arresting and trying to extradite their chief financial officer back to the U.S. for this charges of fraud? Now, all of a sudden, you see the company running these ads and, you know.
That's an interesting theory.
We want to be, you know, we want to be with you. You know, don't believe everything you hear. So who's playing who is what I want to know. And what is this all about? You know, it's just not about bringing her back to face charges of fraud and violating sanctions. It's probably 5G.
Well, 5G, they say, is 100 times faster than 4G. So there's potentially a lot at stake in that respect, particularly if you're a larger business who does a lot of e-commerce. Not just that, I mean, certainly for any, you know, smartphone user that happens to, you know, be part of a 5G network, that too could transform, you know, the way we socialize. But, you know, with Huawei saying in their ads, "Don't believe everything you hear," that's pretty aggressive.
Yes, it is. And it's a surprise, and surprising that they're letting them run those ads and so forth, but most people don't know who Huawei is, I wouldn't think.
Well, you know. God bless the First Amendment.
Yes. Speaking of Venezuela, Guaido, the Venezuelan opposition leader, he's back at, I guess he's in Caracas, and he after flouting a court-imposed travel ban by touring Latin America countries just to boost support for his campaign and also to oust Maduro. And, of course, he was greeted with cheering supporters, and he climbed onto a car roof and gave a thumbs up. I wouldn't do that if I was him. But if I was him, I wouldn't be climbing onto a car roof, you know, just to give a thumbs up to people and
Someone with a sniper rifle happens to be 100, 200 yards away, giving him a thumbs down.
He's pretty gutsy there, but he has vowed to return to lead protests scheduled for today and tomorrow during the carnival holiday period. But he did keep details of his trip under wraps.
Yeah, well, for sure, his return could become the next flashpoint in his standoff with Maduro. You know, as he tries to keep up momentum and get his international backers to, you know, further isolate Maduro and his socialist government. you know, most Western countries now recognize Guaido as Venezuela's legit head of state. His possible arrest could allow the opposition to highlight how the Maduro administration represses political foes. Could also prompt the U.S. to impose even harsher sanctions and possibly even take a closer step to some military action, although I don't see anyone saying that they see that kind of action likely. But Maduro does retain control of state institutions as well as the apparent loyalty of senior officers in his armed services.
Well, you know, it does make you wonder if all the West or most Western countries recognize him as the legitimate head of state, how can you rule the nation if you're not in possession of where you need to be? So how can all these other countries recognize him as the, I mean, you can't deal with them.
It's got to be hard. I mean, he's got to be feeling the heat. And, you know, the question is he going to, will he end up acting like a desperate despot and, you know, shoot, you know, have his military, you know, shoot his way out of the country? Or, I mean, I can't imagine he thinks, well, you know, I'm being naive. I was going to say, I can't imagine he thinks that, you know, all this international opposition and you know, and internal opposition is just going to go away. Because it's not. It's only probably going to ramp up until he's gone. So, you know, if maybe he's just buying time to make sure he gets his hands on more gold until he can flee the country, and you know, then either negotiate, you know, his departure with Guaido, or you know, just up and abruptly leave and let the chips fall where they may.
Well, there's a new word today that we're going to learn.
Tiltro.
Tiltro? What the heck is Tiltro?
This was exciting. It was sort of, we'll call it serendipitous, which could be the second word of the day, I guess. Mm-hmm. But the European Central Bank, Melody, is expected to give banks fresh long-term loans known as Tiltros, T-L-T-R-O for short, to keep credit flowing to companies in the Eurozone. Real significant for a number of reasons, not the least of which, you know, the tight credit that a number of countries within the EU are experiencing. Now, the ECB hopes that an already marked economic downturn won't be exacerbated by a sudden crunch in lending. So, Melody, tell us, what, in fact, are Tiltros?
Well, Tiltros stands for Targeted Longer-Term Refinancing Operations. And the European Central Bank gave banks a total of 739 billion euros of cash in 4 year Tiltros in both 2016 and 2017. So this is all part of their stimulus. The targeted part of the name is key. As long as banks lent the money onto the real economy to companies in particular, they could get cash back rather than pay interest on it, as the loan would be charged at the ECB's, of course, minus 0.4% deposit rate. What a deal!
That's interesting. I mean, why are we even talking about them? What's up with Tiltros anyway?
Well, once the remaining maturity of the previous loans falls below 1 year, only part of the money counts towards the bank's net stable funding ratio. So they will have a greater incentive from June to pay the loans back to the ECB. So this would shrink their balance sheet, the ECB's balance sheet, while forcing banks to find more expensive funding and also restricting their ability to loan. So the lending data already showed a big dip in corporate lending growth in January, in line with the bank's tendency to lend more freely during booms and cut credit sharply during slowdowns. So banks' exceptionally weak profits are also expected to reinforce the so-called pro-cyclical behavior. As Tiltros mature in large chunks, the ECB fears a cliff edge effect.
Hmm. Well, the big question then is, did Tiltros work?
Well, it's not a matter of whether they work. It's a matter of, are they good for their country and so forth. But growth and bank lending hit post-crisis highs last year. And the ECB survey showed that funding is not among banks' top concerns, suggesting that the Tiltros have worked their way through the economy. So the bank surveyed overwhelmingly, said that they had loaned the funds onto businesses and did lower their costs, which, you know, sort of allowed them to ease their credit conditions.
Well, what's the ECB expected to do with respect to Tiltros?
Having already discussed a new Tiltro, it is expected to commit to a facility as early as Thursday, but may hold off on the final details until as late as June. So that's just before the remaining maturity of the first junk of the old Tiltros fall below 1 year.
Well, how are the new loans going to differ from the old ones?
Well, the ECB chief economist described the old Tiltros as very generous. So that suggests the conditions could be less favorable this time around, although Eurozone's downturn deepens, or if the Eurozone's downturn deepens, policymakers could, you know, continue to stay generous. So I would think that the new loan is likely to be a shorter period, as 2 or 3 years rather than the previous 4. It could also have a floating interest rate initially set at the main rate, which is currently 0. And if the cash is no longer targeted, banks could use it as they see fit. The risk is that some would buy government bonds and cash and cash in on the difference in interest rates, helping the sales, but doing nothing for the rest of the economy.
Well, I don't get it then. I mean, what's the controversy?
Well, Italian and Spanish banks hold 56% of the 724 billion euros. It's still outstanding from previous Tiltros. Some policymakers said this suggests that this type of loan is in reality directed at the particular countries rather than the Eurozone as a whole. Basically, stimulus doesn't work, ladies and gentlemen. It's temporary. Taxpayers get it. In the end, we'll be right back.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with 2 black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com. Today.
All back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. Wouldn't you like to buy gold at 1288 instead of 5088, ladies and gentlemen? So that's what we got to look forward to, and you can't get a little down just because gold pulled back. I tell everyone, everybody who'd ask me, well, where do you think gold is going? It can always drop back, and I've said that on this program. The fundamentals are there to take it to the sky, ladies and gentlemen. They have a lot of power. You had to have dumped a lot of gold into the market. I haven't had a chance to do any type of research to see if there was anything significant or something that we could track and so forth where someone else did. And so I'll make that a prime topic this week. But something big had to happen. You just don't fall out. Or was the market just getting weak with no buyers, because the stock market was going higher with a little bit of manipulation in there? It's easy to rig these markets. You had a lot of you had palladium hitting all-time records, going up over 1500, and then some, and then some, and they kept going and going and going. So, you know, who knows what could have what was the trigger point to have gold fall back. So, but take advantage of the lower prices and give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. Well, you know, Dave, the United States lowered the flag today at the Jerusalem consulate that had served as a diplomatic channel to the Palestinians, merging the mission with the new U.S. embassy to Israel in the contested city. And so it seems like the Palestinians have voiced anger, of course, what they see as Washington's latest move against them. Whereas previously the consulate reported on Palestinian matters directly to Washington, the staff has now been repurposed in the embassy as a Palestinian affairs unit, which the U.S. ambassador to Israel, David Friedman, they are under the U.S. ambassador to Israel, David Friedman. So, Palestinian negotiator, veteran Palestinian negotiator, said this is the last nail in the coffin.
Peacemaking has been such a challenge for decades. Israeli-Palestinians talks last collapsed in 2014. The White House says it intends to present a new peace plan after the national election in Israel is over on April 9th. Israel, as we know, deems all of Jerusalem, including the eastern section that it captured in the 1967 war and annexed in a move not recognized internationally, as its undivided capital. Now, Washington has avoided such language in the past, signaling that the final status of the city should be negotiated by the two sides. Palestinians want to make East Jerusalem the capital of a state that they seek, in the occupied West Bank and the Gaza Strip. So, you know, the U.S. consulate in Jerusalem had dated back 175 years to when the city, which is holy to Jews, Christians, and Muslims, was under Ottoman rule.
Well, I just want to touch on this briefly, and then I want to go down and see what the EU and the U.S. is in talks about. But Russian President Vladimir Putin today suspended Russia's participation in a key nuclear arms treaty in response to Washington's decision to withdraw. How many countries are in that treaty, Dave?
Just us and.
If one withdraws, there's no who did they withdraw from?
Well, we withdrew. Yeah, I mean, we announced our withdrawal, which, you know, led to Russia essentially being the, I don't believe it was an official formal withdrawal by the U.S., but it was announced that the U.S. would withdraw presumably, you know, no longer comply with some of the limitations. I know that the U.S. National security leaders have been raising concerns about this new hypersonic missile that Russia says it's developed and is ready in the next few years of putting into service. Now, you know, I forget if that is a long range missile, or if it can be used as an intermediate range missile as well. In any event, the U.S. Doesn't have anything like that hypersonic missile that's ready for action. Thankfully, neither side ought to, but, you know, we live in a world still where if you're not moving ahead, if you're not modernizing, you're viewed to be falling behind. So we can only hope that sanity continues to hold here, Melody, in an ever increasingly tense world.
Well, the European Union's top trade officials today are going to update their U.S. counterparts this week on progress obtaining a negotiating mandate for a trade deal on industrial goods, and kind of raise concerns over existing and potential future U.S. tariffs. EU Trade Commissioner Cecilia Malmström is going to meet with Robert Lighthizer Wednesday this week in Washington. He's the U.S. trade representative. And the EU's executive arm, the European Commission, has the sole responsibility for negotiating trade deals with the whole 28-nation bloc of 513 million people. So,
yeah, that'll be interesting. You know, Germany's apparently ready to start quickly. France, on the other hand, is reluctant. You know, rather than negotiating a comprehensive trade deal that could take a very long time, the EU's keen to reach a quicker agreement with U.S. on trade and industrial goods alone. That's excluding agriculture, that tends to be a lot more controversial.
Well, yeah, I think the big concern is over the tariffs on the cars and car parts. You know, that's a major factor for everybody.
Yeah, the steel and aluminum tariffs that started this whole crazy thing a year and a half ago.
I'm not surprised, but who is really responsible, Dave, for this early 2019 paper market rally that we've been experiencing?
Well, you know, I guess it depends who you talk to, but, you know, if you ask me, I believe we can thank the central banks for the rally.
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
You know, Melody, after the Dow suffered the worst Christmas Eve trading day ever, you know, massive central bank monetary liquidity helped push the index up 20% from its low over the, you know, the next 2 months. Into February. Of course, the markets were due for a reversal, as, you know, nothing goes down in a straight line. But to see the sort of buying in the face of negative economic news, and, you know, as you mentioned earlier, the lackluster earnings, means that the inevitable coming crash will be even bigger when it finally hits. Now, according to an article, Back to Fundamentals, a guy named Daniel LaCalle stated this: in 2018, we saw the first drop in global liquidity in more than a decade, and that generated significant losses in the financial markets.
That's mainly because the Federal Reserve changed its tone on the number of rate hikes. You had the ECB, they also announced that it would be much more accommodative, and the Central Bank of China, they introduced the largest injection of liquidity in 5 years. In fact, just between December 26th and February 15th, we've seen the largest injection of liquidity in the markets of the last 2 years, bringing these global money supply to record levels. Thus, as the global money supply jumped by more than $3 trillion within 2 months. The question is, though, how far can this money printing go if the fundamentals are lacking? If we compare the S&P 500 to forward earnings per share, we can see another fundamental disconnect.
Yeah, the Fed's dovish flip has made earnings largely irrelevant for the market's near-term direction. But we can probably expect even more market upside, irrespective of what historicals, you know, that companies report or what guidance they deliver. So the insanity of higher stock prices will likely continue for, you know, a short while longer. That is, until the markets are no longer able to ignore the increasingly lousy economic data. Regardless, ladies and gentlemen, don't be fooled that the central banks can fix anything. All they are doing right now is, as they usually do, is propping up asset prices for a while longer. The big thing to remember is this: even though the markets could go higher in 2019, central bank market intervention will only make the inevitable crash much worse when it finally comes.
You know, and you know, for all these central banks to begin to intervene already, we have corporate buybacks already beginning to be a record, beating last year's record. They're on pace to beat last year's record. I mean, it's just like, how can anybody feel comfortable with having their money in these markets? I don't get it. I mean, all the signs are there. And it's like, why don't people protect what they have instead of just saying, well, you know, if the ship goes down, I'm just going to go down with everybody else? You know, it's not the what you do to protect what you have.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about what have you done for me lately.
Yeah.
And there are going to be a lot of people who regret their faith in the paper markets come soon, I'm afraid.
The Treasury Department is taking the first steps to keep the government from exceeding the $22 trillion debt limit. That went into effect on Saturday. And so this is going to highly unlikely that it's going to set off months of a battle in Congress. I mean, because they're going to find ways to avoid a default at this point in time, hopefully. Treasury gives us extra days to buy gold and silver. Treasury said it began on Friday suspending sales of a special type of Treasury security called slugs. They are used by state and local governments to help manage their bond holdings. Treasury Secretary Mnuchin said last week that the government would start with the sales suspension as a way to clear space to keep the government from exceeding the limit while Congress debates raising the limit. That just cracks me up. Congress debates. When do they ever work to debate anything, you know? Mm-hmm. The debt limit.
Huh? No. Not often anymore.
And, of course, we all know that the debt limit has already been suspended for the past year under an agreement that was approved by Congress as part of a February 2018 budget deal. And, Dave, they'll probably do the same thing again.
Yeah, they're good at finding ways in their parliamentary maneuvering, you know, waiving, you know, suspending, however you want to characterize it. A deal, a bargain is only as good as, you know, both parties to it respect it. You know, the legislation that had the limit ceiling going back into effect on Saturday at whatever level the debt stood at on Friday. Debt hit a new milestone on February 12th. When it topped $22 trillion. That's an increase of a little over $2 trillion since the president took office in January of 2017. The president's $1.5 trillion tax cut we talked about earlier passed in December of 2017. It's followed just a few short months later by unprecedented increases in defense and non-defense discretionary spending, and you know that they've both those things together have only accelerated the rise in the debt. You know, his letter last week to Speaker Nancy Pelosi Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and other congressional leaders, Mnuchin said that the Treasury was ready to utilize additional extraordinary measures to keep from hitting the debt ceiling. Those measures include suspending investments in government pension funds as a way to clear space for other borrowing needed to allow the government to service the debt and make payroll and benefit payments.
You know, we're just about out of time, Dave, and I did want to talk about the 18 numbers showing the U.S. economy is falling apart rapidly. This was from Michael Snow. We're not going to get to it, but we'll try to get to it later on in the week. The 18 numbers, you know, or maybe Wednesday or even Friday, because we have James Corbett on this week on Friday. I get to talk to him once again this week. But it's everything that we talk about on this program. And he just kind of sort of tidied it all up and put it in, you know, 18 numbers. And, you know, perhaps we could even put it in our newsletter this week. And but we'll talk about it later on, recapture or just go over the things briefly as far as where's the good news? Where's the numbers for the strong economy that everyone is experiencing? And how long can it stay good? 1-800-375-4188. Thank you, Dave. We'll be back tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen. Until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my